Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Jake, did you see that coming tonight? Superman punch from Roman Reigns taking up Paul Heyman after Paul Heyman told Reigns what he presented as the truth, which is, I'm not protecting Brock Lesnar from you. I'm protecting you from Brock Lesnar. And Reigns gave him a hug, thanked him for years of service, said he loves the wise man, and then turned to leave, but then turned back and gave him a Superman punch. As he's about to hit him with the chair, Brock Lesnar storms out, knocks over the Usos, and preoccupies Reigns as Heyman scurries to safety. Your thoughts on the big angle to, essentially close out the year, and it's the last big angle before day one, with next week's show being a holiday show and the following week being preempted on New Year's.
Yeah, I think it's a big angle, but I'm not entirely convinced it's not possibly a swerve. You know, like, yeah. are we talking about, you know, the double cross at day one? You know, because I have a hard time believing that WWE doesn't realize that if they eventually flip the script and go back to Brock being the heel that's managed by Heyman, that the crowd is probably going to reject Roman as a babyface again. That would be my guess if they tried to go down that path one more time, especially if that's the WrestleMania match, because we've seen that so many times before. So my guard is up for this potentially being, you know, a double cross, and this was a plan from Reigns and Heyman the entire time.
I think that's a prudent interpretation of tonight. Heyman taking a Superman punch is a lot to ask Heyman, storyline-wise. You know, that's supposed to be a devastating move. Heyman, a non-athlete in his 50s. We know he keeps himself in prime physical shape, but still, you know, a Superman punch could do, could be presented as a price. Why would you do that to double-cross Lesnar? That to me, to be satisfied, I'd need to know that answer. Would there be other ways to accomplish that if this were real life? And Heyman and Reigns wanted to swerve Lesnar. So I throw that out there not because it makes it any more or less likely that this is a swerve, because it doesn't really make sense for it not to be, but it doesn't make sense for Heyman to take a Superman punch just to swerve Lesnar unless the match plays out a certain way where it makes sense that this was needed. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think Brock has been booked in a way where he's slightly more clever than WWE babyfaces are typically booked. You know, he doesn't typically have the wool pulled over his eyes quite as easily as others. And so I think you could just tell the story that they thought they really had to sell this thing. Like, he's not going to fall for the generic, banana peel type situation that an ordinary babyface would, and so they had to take it to the next level to pull off the caper. Now, I could be completely wrong, and this is just a straightforward story, but I think with the way that Lesnar and particularly Heyman and Reigns have written their stories over the last 12 to 18 months, they typically don't go for, you know, for something quite so straightforward. There's usually layers to this. And so I could be completely off base, but my antenna are up that this isn't quite what it seems.
Yeah, no, I think that is very fair. This is WWE, and it just feels a little premature to pull the trigger on this. What do you think of the way that they built up to this throughout the show? Heyman waiting around, Lesnar showing up. Then when Reigns finally showed up, coming out the other side of the SUV. Did you like the performances from Lesnar, Reigns, and Heyman throughout?
I did. Yeah, I think they pulled it off. You know, I, there was enough fear on Heyman's face when Brock got out of the car, and he has so successfully, you know, put on this facade of being this kind of nice guy who's smiling and jovial, and, you know, that without Heyman, he's kind of a different guy, you know, that's actually somewhat agreeable and, you know, somebody you could get along with, the same, you know, kind of act he put on with Sami Zayn, although you could kind of always see who he was, the sinister sort of heel underneath the surface. And we saw some of that with how, you know, he's conversed with Adam Pearce over the last couple of weeks. So I think the performances were good. You know, it wasn't, you know, the best story that I've ever seen play out on an episode of wrestling. No, but I think for who was involved and how Brock has been kind of a stiff actor over the years, I thought he's been markedly better than he has been in years past.
Very good. Overall thoughts on the show before we move to introductions and callers.
You know, other than what's been going on with Reigns and Lesnar and Heyman, I think SmackDown is kind of treading water a little bit. You know, I think the women's feud for the championship kind of came into focus on tonight's show. But they still haven't done a particularly satisfactory job of finding things for other women to do who are not involved in the title picture. You know, if you're not Sasha Banks or Charlotte Flair, it's a struggle for screen time and for, you know, character development. And I'm kind of pleasantly surprised with how they've done with Shotzi thus far. And you know, I think they're doing well with Toni Storm. But there's just not a lot of character there to sink your teeth into. I was surprised, to see, you know, King Woods continue doing the King shtick as long as he has. You know, I think at the time I thought he was going to win the King of the Ring tournament and then, you know, try to do something a little bit different with the King gimmick, but it's been fairly standard as far as WWE Kings are concerned. But it was an average show. I wouldn't call it good. It wasn't the worst. More wrestling than I've been accustomed to seeing on SmackDown in recent months, and that was an improvement actually, because I think they had fallen with the mix between angles and matches a little bit too far towards what felt like a drama show rather than a wrestling show.
All right, very good. Well, let's pause and introduce the show, and then move on to phone calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, December 17th, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program and the editor and founder and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, host of the Wade Keller Post Shows and Podcasts, and a variety of VIP audio shows for our VIP members and Patreon supporters, such as the Post Pay-Per-View Roundtables, which we'll be doing after day one in a couple of weeks, and also Everything with Rich Fan, and The Fix with Todd Martin, along with some solo shows, including earlier today, Focus on AEW, a nearly daily update covering AEW exclusively. Focusing on them today was a mailbag edition hitting on a variety of topics. So go VIP if you're not, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Gift yourself an ad-free listening experience to our free shows, such as this one, and a ton of other benefits. The other voice you hear is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net, frequent co-host here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Jake, great to have you back.
Always a pleasure, Wade. Thanks for having me along.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we are talking SmackDown, and we invite you to join the conversation. The phone number to reach us is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on our switchboard. As always, we welcome our regulars, of course, but we also invite first-time callers or infrequent callers who have been lurking, who might be able to tune in live now and then. Please consider yourself invited and give us a call. You can also email us if that's easier for you to contribute to the show that way. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's begin rolling through our phone calls here, and we'll begin with Justin in Charlotte, North Carolina. Justin, good to hear from you again. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Hello.
Hello, Justin. Yeah. Yeah, what'd you think of SmackDown?
Yo, oh, you can hear me. Okay. I actually I feel that this particular week, I felt the Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman, Brock Lesnar storyline was strong enough to kind of carry the show. I agree with Jake about how I felt SmackDown's kind of been treading water with basically, to me, since the draft, just relying really heavy on we got Brock, we got Roman, we got Charlotte, we got Sasha. We kind of, as long as we put them on television, we're giving you star power. I actually think, and I'm not saying Raw is a great show by any means, but I actually feel Raw has done a better job since the draft of kind of trying to, like, for instance, the perfect contrast is what they're doing with Liv Morgan on Raw versus what they've done with Toni Storm to this point, where I don't feel Liv Morgan has lived up to the moment, but they haven't really put her in as many compromising positions as they had Toni Storm on SmackDown, where this is the first time in the Charlotte Toni Storm storyline where I feel like they've really given Toni Storm anything. I mean, the pie stuff is just, you know, I know she threw a pie at Charlotte's face a couple of weeks ago, but I'm saying something legitimate as far as her being a credible challenger or a credible athlete. This was the first step they've done. I feel like they've been feuding since before Survivor Series. So, yeah, I just kind of want to stick to the main stuff as far as the Brock stuff. I also want to talk about the women's division a little bit, but the Brock stuff, what you guys were talking about at the beginning of the show, and I agree with Jack. I this is totally a swerve here. There's no way they're ending this marriage with Roman and Paul Heyman like this before the Rumble and before Mania. How they're going to get around Superman Punch, because I was actually shocked to see them go that far with it. You don't see Heyman do any physicality. So I don't know how they're going to get around that, if they even think we're going to remember this in a couple of weeks. But it's got to be a swerve. I can't see, because what do you do with Paul Heyman? Is Paul Heyman a babyface now? It's like, you know, when you really kind of dissect it, it's like, well, what do you do with Paul Heyman? You going to align him with Brock Lesnar? Is he just going to be off television? I think that kind of hurts Roman's act a little bit. I think it's a swerve.
Yeah, I think you are right to be highly suspicious, as Jake is, of it being a swerve. And I think a key point is, what good is Heyman as a babyface relative to as a heel? If Lesnar stays babyface, which the crowd wants, and Reigns stays heel for now, which seems to be working, Heyman as a babyface with Lesnar, even if the Usos are on Reigns' side, it just doesn't feel right. I think it takes a lot away from Paul Heyman's act. Jake, can you envision Heyman in a babyface role, speaking on behalf of Lesnar in a way that's particularly useful or entertaining compared to the other option, which is this is a swerve and he stays with and solidifies himself with Reigns? And I haven't had a chance to fully digest how this matches up with all the other clues we've had along the way in terms of where Heyman would end up and how much of it could have been a plot where Reigns was in on it. I'm not sure that I'm excited about the prospect. I know I'm stacking a question on a question here. I'm not sure how excited I am about the prospect of Reigns always knowing Heyman is on his side. And all of this was a ruse to, you know, for weeks and weeks to get Lesnar to buy in that Reigns really wasn't happy with Heyman. So your thoughts on both of those matters.
I just can't imagine, you know, because Lesnar isn't there every week. And typically Heyman is. And so are you going to have Paul Heyman out there speaking on behalf of Brock Lesnar and constantly being under threat of violence from Roman Reigns and the other heels on the show? You know, and are you going to task other baby faces with defending him if that's the case? You know, because that seems like a difficult position to put other baby faces in, because he's been stabbing them in the back repeatedly, you know, over the course of Roman's title reign. And so there shouldn't be anybody there willing to defend him. And so he's essentially in no man's land tasked with, you know, defending Brock Lesnar on the weeks that he's not at television, you know, as his advocate. But it's a difficult thing to process, which is why I think, okay, well, you know, you laid it out. They have a holiday episode next week, and then they're preempted on, you know, on the New Year's show, or New Year's Eve, and then they have day one. And so, I mean, if they quickly, you know, right the wrong, so to speak, of the turn and kind of restore order at day one with the swerve, then it saves them from having to go through, you know, that process of Paul Heyman being awkward on television for weeks and weeks at a time before they get to the next, you know, Reigns and Lesnar match. But that being said, is it possible? I guess. You know, I just don't envision it being very good television. And in terms of how they explain the you know, the plan, or, you know, the I guess Reigns constantly being two or three steps ahead of everybody else, I think that's an easier sell than weeks of awkward babyface Paul Heyman. But maybe that's just me.
No, I think it is too. It doesn't mean both are either are perfect options, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, if this has been planned out all along, even if it's imperfect, but if there's enough to cling to, or there's a turning point, you know, that they can point to where Reigns went from genuinely suspicious to I trust you, Paul. There's a reason he started to trust him, and they hatch this plot. Then that works for me too. I just want that level of detail. You know, I don't think it's too much to ask that it doesn't feel like they're winging it or being sloppy and think no one's paying attention. So I'm hopeful of that. What about Toni Storm this week, Jake? Was this a step up for her? She was in the ring when Sasha came out at the beginning. Very happy Sasha was mentoring her or standing by her side, I guess is the term they're using. And she gets an important pinfall win to elevate her that did not involve, you know, showing up Charlotte with a pie, but it involved showing her up in the ring. What did you think of what was booked and also the execution from Toni and Charlotte and really everybody involved in this?
Well, I think the ring work was, for the most part, pretty good. I really didn't expect a 20-minute women's tag match to open the show. I mean, there's been so little in-ring action on SmackDown recently that seeing a match of that length was legitimately surprising. I haven't been, you know, completely won over by Toni Storm's babyface work. I'm still waiting, you know, for the fire to come out and for her to show some, you know, something that makes you think, okay, there's really something there in terms of her character and promo work. But I've never had a question about whether or not she was with it in the ring. I think she's fantastic in that capacity. And getting a win over Charlotte is meaningful because they've been, you know, more disciplined than usual when it comes to pinning champions in non-title matches recently. So I think it was a good night for Toni, but they have some work ahead of them in terms of really selling her as being, you know, a baby face that people are going to get behind. It's the same issue they have with Liv Morgan, honestly. You know, they both go out there and they look like they're trying to shake off the nerves and like they've been given a script to sell car insurance and they just don't know how they feel about it.
That's well put. Absolutely. All right. We'll go back to Justin for any follow-up before we move to our other callers. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, stick with the women. You know, WWE has, to me, with the Liv Morgan and Toni Storm pushes, I mean, to me, they've given them opportunity. So maybe they need to give Toni Storm a little bit more, but this is, you know, we're kind of seeing an example of why they kind of lean on the Charlottes and the Beckys and people of that magnitude because – they've given people an opportunities, and I don't quite feel they've lived up to it. I know people are going to say they're overly scripted or this, that, or the third, but they're all scripted, essentially. Maybe someone's given more leeway than others, but I just feel like these new pushes quite hasn't worked, and maybe it's just, you know, look, we're in December. This is normally TLC time of the year. We're not quite at the Royal Rumble. We're still a ways from Mania, so they're just trying to fill TV time. But beyond Bianca Belair's push earlier this year as far as the women's division, I don't really feel like who they've pushed beyond the mainstays has really taken the ball and really ran with it. What you guys think about that?
Jake, your thoughts?
You know, I think that's probably an accurate statement. You know, there haven't been a lot of stars made in the women's division outside of Bianca recently. And I guess I can't entirely place that at the feet of the talent. You know, they've been given opportunities, but they haven't always been booked strongly either. And you know, when you're suddenly thrust into the spotlight and you haven't really found your confidence and you're trying to go out there and deliver these scripted promos, it's not an easy thing to do. And so I guess I don't think Toni Storm and Liv Morgan have been bad in their roles. In fact, I think they've done pretty well, and they've been, you know, whether they've been carried in the ring or whether, you know, whether they've been, just rising to the occasion to some degree. I think they both delivered in the ring with Becky and Charlotte respectively. And so they've got the ring portion of the equation, you know, to the point where I think they can deliver on a pay-per-view. But it's really that character work that I think makes the difference between being seen as somebody, you know, that's a challenger in a title match and somebody that WWE or more particularly Vince McMahon sees as being somebody that he can get behind as a long-term champion. And I think, you know, Bianca's going to be in that category going forward, but they really do need to establish two or three more people that they can rotate in and out of these women's championships, because as much as I like the four horsewomen, and I think they're all excellent in their own way. But, you know, they can't be tasked with carrying this company forever, especially now that Becky, for one, is starting to have kids, and you know there's obviously the injury bug, and as they're getting older, and so it's going to be tough. But I do agree. You know, they have an issue in the women's division because they do rely too much on the four horsewomen, and it's going to be a matter of establishing some of these new acts and giving them the confidence they need to succeed.
And a way to establish a new act is do a better job week to week, start to finish, valuing what you see in the ring, and having some of these up-and-coming wrestlers be impressive in the ring and build credibility with fans before they're suddenly the number one contender or the new person on the scene who is thrust into matches against the top star. And that's just a lack of roster depth and a decision on formatting, and I think a fear over losing viewers if you just put Toni Storm out there, just winning matches against, if they had it, more depth in the women's division. And it can be women that we don't see very often at all, just people who are in NXT who they trust to take a few bumps. But build up some wins so that the way to establish new stars isn't, oh, look, she pinned the champion in a non-title situation. Now she's earned a title match. That formula isn't super effective, but even if it was, it's so repetitive. And it's just they're having people leap into main events before they've established a long-term bond or a short-term bond even with fans. You know, we don't know who these people are. We don't even necessarily know what their finishing moves are. They haven't been well established. We get maybe a vignette, and then boom, they win a non-title match. So that's a problem that goes deeper than booking, because it has to do with the roster depth and not wanting a bunch of people on payroll. And I think people who don't get wrestling and just look at, you know, wrestling history and what I'm talking about, and again, you can philosophically disagree with me, but I think mostly it's people making decisions who are the bean counters going, do we need her? Do we need her? Do we need him? Do we need him? All right, let's cut him and our budget will look better in the next quarterly statement. Not really thinking about how valuable those, you know, pawns are on the chessboard to be knocked down on the way to go after the queen. And it's, you know, it's the choice that would be made, but you know, Toni Storm and the struggle and Liv Morgan, who's been around a long time, but you know, giving her a winning streak on TV for 6 weeks, while others are also, by the way, winning and losing. So it seems like it's this active division where a lot of people are trying to get the attention of the Invisible Championship Committee or Pearson DeVille, and eventually somebody wins out, and it's not just a one-week gimmicky gauntlet match. I think that's a better way to go about it, and I think it would be more effective. And they might learn along the way, too. They might find out, hey, this person we wanted to push is not who we want to push now because fans are reacting to this other person who lost a couple matches but looks so good. Let's give her a winning streak now and go with her. And I think if fans sense there's actually, in kind of a work sense, in a real-life sense, not just a work sense, a battle to see who gets to the pay-per-view main event, I think that'd work better too. But I just don't see them changing anytime soon. Justin, any closing words from you?
No, that's it. Really appreciate the show, taking my call, and see you listen to the show.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Justin. Yep. Good to hear from you. All right. Up next, let's go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, good to hear from you again. What stood out on SmackDown for you?
I have a question about a potential Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, babyface combo. It seems pretty ridiculous to me. Would that be the equivalent of Bobby Heenan having the Heenan family as baby faces?
I mean, equivalent's a strong word, but yeah, if Bobby Heenan had turned on, and I'm going to go back in time to the peak years, if Bobby Heenan had turned on Hulk Hogan, or if Bobby Heenan had turned on Nick Bockwinkel and joined Hulk Hogan at the beginning of Hulkamania in the AWA, I mean, it just would have been a waste of Bobby Heenan. You know, Heyman doesn't really have like a family. I mean, Reigns made it clear, blood, you know, the Usos and Reigns are family and he's the wise man. But yeah, I mean, it's not a good fit. And that's what we're saying. It feels awkward in an odd use of Heyman's talents to have him be in a position where fans are expected to cheer him. I think anyone who would associate with Heyman would be less likely to be enthusiastically cheered based on the way Heyman acts. But Jake, as Heyman acted as heinous as other heel managers or as ridiculously as other heel managers, are we missing that maybe along the way here they've been trying to build up some sympathy and a sense of honor with Heyman that we're not giving full credit to? That could make a babyface run a little more sense.
Well, I guess the only thing that I could really identify, you know, as kind of a weather balloon about a babyface run for Heyman and Lesnar is that, you know, that segment a week ago where, you know, Sammy was in the wheelchair and they were, you know, palling around about hunting moose in Saskatchewan or whatever. You know, Heyman was the guy who, you know, said he wondered if the edibles were kicking in because what he was seeing was so absurd. And then he went into the big fire up speech for Brock Lesnar and people responded positively to it. Now, was that a test to see if people would get fired up for Heyman and Lesnar as a babyface? I don't know, but it's the only thing I could think of on television where Heyman and Lesnar were paired together and they were doing some of their shtick in a bit of a different way. And people responded in a way that got, you know, positive cheers. And so, I mean, is it possible that they've been kind of doing dry runs with this on house shows and things like that to see if it worked? I don't know. I haven't really paid close attention to those reports, but that's what I could think of from television. I personally don't think it would work long term, but maybe they're trying to convince themselves of that.
All right, Ryan, back to you.
I have a question on Sasha Banks. Is she trying to transition outside of wrestling to like something in the Marvel universe, or is this just because she said that she went to the premiere and she also was dressed up, you know, a little bit like Spider-Man and heard rumors, you know, that fans want her to be in a Marvel movie. So any rumors you've heard on that?
I haven't, but I bet the answer to your question is she would love that. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. And I mean, if she's angling for it, good for her. Jake, have you read or heard anything on that front?
I mean, nothing about actual interest from Marvel or, you know, Kevin Feige or anybody who's involved with building that Marvel universe. But she does have a relationship with Disney through her appearance on The Mandalorian. And so I'm sure that was a factor in getting to the Spider-Man premiere. But I don't think there's anything official. But, yeah, like you said, Wade, if the opportunity came in front of her, I'm sure she'd dive at it.
Ryan, anything else you want to add to that or another topic?
Final question is, Adam Pearce, do you ever see him getting in the ring with Drew McIntyre, like they've been teasing with Sonya and Naomi, or is this just something that he's just do as a non-wrestling character?
I don't think so. Jake, are you getting any sense they're building to that? This just seems like typical authority figure, conduct.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. He's been in, I think his actual retirement from wrestling was when he was in the NWA in like 2014, maybe 2015, and he's been in WWE ever since in backstage roles. And so, I honestly I can't think that he would decide to just jump back into the ring, maybe for a one-off if they have an angle in mind for him. You know, he did. you know, sort of get involved with that Reigns feud with, was it Kevin Owens, I think, you know, back in the Thunderdome era. But I can't see him working official matches at any point. It just doesn't seem like something he's interested in, not at least not that he spoke about publicly.
Yep. Okay. Ryan, I appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks for taking the questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, we'll go next to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, good to hear from you again. How are things going?
Things are always good, man. Always good to talk to you. Jake, good
thanks.
To talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for asking.
Yep, Wade, it was – I mean, I'm with you guys. I think, you know, with Brock not being there full-time, I just think – even though the Superman punch, like you said, was a little much, I didn't expect that at all for sure. But I do think Roman and Paul will find a way. They'll make it work for them to stay together, you know, at day one. I just don't see that going really any other way. But it was the Superman punch was a big visual for sure tonight. I was definitely surprised they went that route. But other than that, it was not a good show. I didn't enjoy it really at all. The first hour was, I'm with you, Jake, as far as they gave the women a lot in the tag match. But again, the Charlotte moonsault in a tag match, stop. I hate that. I hate it. Stop. Don't do it unless it's a big moment, and that was not a big moment. Tony, you know, getting the win was fine, but to me she made it seem like it was like a one in a million thing that she was going to win and just over-celebrated it. I never liked that. What do you think about the over-celebrating when the challenger pins the champion? Because, again, Tony's, you know, did the pie and all that, but then she wins the match, doesn't really get a lot of time to do anything in the match, and then just pinning Charlotte with a roll-up and getting that excited about it, I just never liked that. What do you think about that?
Interesting point, yeah. The over-celebrating, like, I can't believe I just accomplished this, sort of does indicate even somebody with some acclaim and fans being excited about their history and debuting, it just basically just drops her down to the very bottom rung and deprives fans who like her or fans who don't know about her for thinking she's a really hot prospect who maybe it's not a shock she could score a win over Charlotte, especially under the circumstances that she did. Jake.
Well, I have to imagine that that's what she was told to do. You know, it's one of those issues that I think a lot of people have spoken about with the way WWE handles people coming into the company. You know, Toni Storm isn't new to WWE. She's held, you know, the NXT UK championship. She, you know, she competed in NXT for a long time. And obviously she was a part of the UK and Japanese independent scene prior to that. And so it's like, okay, we have to ignore that this person has been in the wrestling industry for over a decade. And now she's this fresh recruit, just happy to be there, you know, and it is a bit of a downer because anybody who's followed Toni Storm over the years knows, you know, who she is and what she's accomplished and how confident she should be in her skill set. And she's just tasked with playing a character that feels like she's, you know, just very green and unfamiliar with her surroundings and everything else. And so, yeah, I agree. It's not my favorite look, but I don't put the blame on her. This is just the way WWE chooses to present new talent when they appear on TV.
Yeah, it's good to emphasize that every now and then, maybe more than every now and then, that criticism of what wrestlers do or what commentators do doesn't mean the person playing the part is to blame. It's the end result that's being criticized, not necessarily. I mean, there's things where clearly they're intended to perform a certain way, and they do a poor job with it, and that can be evaluated. You know, with what she was asked to do, is she doing a good job? That's one way to evaluate. But what do you think about what she's being asked to do? And my hunch is she's being told, celebrate like crazy. And we can evaluate if we think that's good. But right now what we're talking about is that a good decision in general? And, you know, it'd be nice to just have some people arrive who WWE could treat like they earned their way onto the roster and they bring some skills, and maybe they're going to be hot out of the gate. And when they win, they're going to act like they sort of expected that might happen, as opposed to shocked that they're good enough to belong. Yeah, so back to you, Sean.
Yeah, and going back to the beginning, like, Tony should get a ring entrance. I mean, I'm sorry. If you're pushing her to be wrestling Charlotte Flair, guys, just don't make this so hard. Don't limit her to that. It's just ridiculous. It makes her look bad. And then were you guys not excited? I don't like the way they're doing it with the gauntlet, stupid 12 Days of Christmas gauntlet. But at least somebody is getting an Intercontinental title shot. We actually have somebody that might wrestle for the Intercontinental Championship because they don't know what that championship is anymore because it's nowhere. You don't hear anything about it. And what do you guys think about Sammy maybe winning it back? Because I think that would be fine because Sammy needs something with this, the heel stick he's doing, which is good. And I think that would be a way to get that on him and something to have him celebrate about and get excited about. What do you guys think about that prospect?
Yeah, speaking of people who are executing what they're asked to do so well, Sammy is doing an amazing job with the role that he's being assigned. The 12 Days of Christmas Intercontinental Title Gauntlet match, you know, it takes place next Friday. The winner gets an IC title shot. We can celebrate that they're giving attention to the IC title and that they might actually have a title match, you know, on a pay-per-view, and they're going to build up to it. The list of contenders is not a impressive list. I mean, we've got Eric and Ivar, who are tag team contenders. We've got Drew Gulak, who's, you know, wondering what to do when there's not a 24/7 title to chase. Mansoor, who's just, you know, barely established and has been off TV for a while, it seems, or he's been totally forgettable, which is also possible. Cesaro, who just got crushed, but for, you know, needlessly quickly, although he got attacked before the match and was distracted, but still. Ricochet, who's, you know, really good at standing in the background lately backstage, admiring King Xavier or whatever. No momentum there. And then Jinder Mahal and Shanky, who lost the Viking Raiders, and then Humberto and Angel Garza, who got crushed last week. So it's at least half tag wrestlers, and it's not an impressive list. So that's the downside. Like, and WWE doesn't plan ahead enough, and they don't think this way. But if they had been giving Shanky like some wins on TV or give them wins on WWE main event and then air them, you know, on and go, hey, there's like, I've said this before that they could use main event in different ways, but you know, Shanky has been winning matches. He's got a winning streak going. They don't, you know, they might think that sounds too much like AEW, but it's a good idea. And instead of having Humberto and Garza get crushed last week, instead have one of them go on a hot singles run, tell the story. And then, you know, you can say, hey, Cesaro's been on a hot run and that shot to the ribs might cost him his chance at getting the IC title back next week. Hopefully he's recovered by then. You tell that story. You give Mansoor some more wins. You know, they can be telling that story. And heck, have Sheamus cut a promo while he's talking to Ridge Holland about, you know, helping him out. And Sheamus can go, hey, I've got my eye on gold too. Plant those seeds in the last 3 weeks so that when this match happens, you're looking at 5, 6, 7 people that you could imagine winning. That seems believable, and that would be a payoff to some of the buildup. And that layer of booking just isn't there with WWE. So this feels like we're phoning it in on a holiday with one of our gimmick matches to in the end, you know, create a situation where it seems like a title shot is earned, but there's just a lot of filler. And I just think they could do better. Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I don't really have anything to disagree with there. They don't do a good enough job with the mid card and the undercard.
Great point, Wade. Great point.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Fantastic.
That's
point.
Why I threw to you, by the way. It wasn't to disagree. It's to say, what a great idea. No, go ahead.
it does feel mailed in, and it absolutely is. You know, these holiday editions rarely have any substantive material on them, and you know. It almost feels like they put that championship on Shinsuke Nakamura because they were in love with the pairing with Boogs and the entrance with the guitar, and they just didn't have a single idea outside of that to go with, and so it's just been shelved, and they've just been having him do the entrance occasionally because it's a hit with live crowds, and I guess they can do that without the Intercontinental Championship and put it on somebody that they're actually interested in writing something for, like Sami Zayn, and it will probably be a lot more successful. I think WWE does a much better job writing heel champions, especially ones that can talk, than they do writing baby faces. They really struggle to make baby faces interesting, and it's not limited to Nakamura, but I think it's especially poorly executed with Nakamura because he's not, you know, particularly strong on the microphone. And so he's in another category of people they don't pay any attention to.
They're very much in a formula that they are just, you know, mailing in week to week. And it doesn't mean there aren't good segments and there aren't good aspects to it that make the shows worth watching, but it's really unimaginative. They don't seem to be willing or incentivized to shake things up and add some different layers. There's not a sense of, not desperation, but just motivation to go, can we take what we're doing and make it better? There's a sense of, we can get through this. We're getting paid guaranteed money across all fronts, and we just need to fill this TV time, and they're in a comfort zone. You know, I mean, it's pretty clear they're in a comfort zone in terms of how they do things, and there's a level of self-satisfaction with it, and it doesn't feel like there's a lot of layering to the booking that is planned weeks ahead and pays off. And unfortunately, I think it makes it a less compelling show. I mean, I know it makes it a less compelling show than it could be. All right, Sean, back to you.
Yeah, Wade, you've made a lot of good points. I mean, as far as why the booking is just so bad and why the women aren't getting opportunity, or they're not giving them opportunities to get wins to showcase what they do. And that's what's – and I'm worried about Tony and Charlotte being in the title match next week. I'm worried about it. I don't know what they're going to do. I think it's just going to be some – I hope it's a good match. I really do. Two more quick things. The first was, oh, God, Happy Talk was so – God awful. Oh my God. They've got to stop that. I'm tired of Happy Corbin. It's bad. It's really, really bad. And with Drew, I'm very disappointed. This is what they have him in. I didn't want him to get the sword back. I'm with you guys. I'm tired of the sword. I don't know how that helps him. The fans love him still because he's that good in the ring and his promo ability is still really, really good. But gosh, it was that segment as bad as I thought it was? Because, God, it was horrible, I thought.
I think someone needs to make a meme or a screen capture of individual faces in the crowd in the last third of that segment. I mean, there's a bunch of grown men who are questioning their decisions in their life during that segment. You know, and you know, yes, there was a CM Punk chant. And yes, there was a nice enough pop for Drew McIntyre when he came out. But, I mean, literally they're looking around like, I wish I brought a mask. Should I just get up and leave? I don't think I'm projecting here, Jake. It looked like the audience was embarrassed to be watching that as a way to spend 5 minutes of their life.
I mean, you know, it's embarrassing to sit and watch it on television. Like, I feel embarrassed for Moss and Corbin because I mean, I think they actually had something with the bum version of Baron Corbin. You know, like that actually worked in some ways. But this has just been a catastrophe from day one. Like, it's just never clicked. The jokes aren't funny. I have no idea. I mean, I guess I have some idea of who actually likes this backstage. But, it's the audience could not. Well, I don't think anything makes it television without Vince McMahon's approval. But I think the idea that that you could watch this week after week and think, man, I can't wait to write another segment for this is beyond my understanding. It's unbelievably bad. Like I feel bad for everybody involved, including Drew McIntyre, who, you know, if they're not going with Brock Lesnar in the main event of WrestleMania with Reigns, I have to believe he would be like the second guy in line and a couple of months out from that. And he's standing here doing ridiculous skits with swords and desks. Like who moves a desk from Los Angeles to, you know, halfway across the country from a week to week segment? Like how committed are you to the joke that you need to do that?
I mean, and the announcers really should just make a big deal out of that because otherwise it just seems like, you know, we're here at the SmackDown studio where the desk has been sitting here all week. No, they traveled from L.A. to Chicago with that thing. That draw attention to it. Own it. Go, these guys are really committed to the bit. They had to pay, and the sword is still in there, and they're making a big show of it. And, I mean, that's where you want Pat McAfee to just, you know, go into business for himself a little bit and wing it and understand, you know, what people are thinking when they see that. All right, Sean, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah, just one more quick thing. And I will rephrase and say, again, I don't mean to be a downer. We say the show's decent. Other than one good thing, there's not a lot of good things on the show. And going back to the Sonya and Naomi, this is dragging on too long. Like, I don't see the point of where they're going. think Naomi is strong enough of a babyface. I know the fans are into her, but I don't think they're into her. And to have Sonya keep doing this stuff, and then it hurts Shayna by getting whatever that ending was to that, whatever match that supposedly was. I don't know where this is going, guys. Help me figure out where it's going. I want to enjoy it, but I feel like I can't. Wade, I appreciate you, man. Jake, always good to talk to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Thanks. Yep, thanks, Sean. Have a great weekend. I still wish I understood what the, you know, what the origin story was of Sonya's issue with Naomi, and I wish I had faith. It's, you know, we're eventually going to find out. It's almost like that question's not even being asked anymore. It's just been going on so long, we just take it as a given that, you know, Sonya has it out for Naomi, but we'll never know why, and don't even think you're going to get an answer in that way. Jake, your thoughts on this storyline, and Sean, I think accurately framing it as, you know, just finding creative ways to do the same thing week after week after week.
Yeah, I don't – was there an actual genesis for their disagreement? Like, I think it was really just Naomi was upset that she wasn't being featured on television, and she blamed – you know, Sonya for it because she's the authority figure. But why Sonya reacted in the way that she did has never been explained. And I think, you know, pulling in, you know, Shayna Baszler and Natalya and other people who have been kind of dragged into this feud just to fill time so that they can continue to drag the story on has been a waste of everyone's ability. You know, I think Sonya probably will eventually get back in the ring. You know, she was a strong competitor, you know, before she had to take time off for that unfortunate incident. And if I like Naomi. I mean, I think she has a lot of upside, and she's incredibly popular. I mean, she gets huge pops almost everywhere. So why not make use of the talent? I don't understand the writing, and I fear they don't actually have an end game in mind for this. They're just waiting for some indeterminate moment where they're just going to put this match on a pay-per-view and be done with it.
All right. We will move next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, good to hear from you. What do you want to bring up from SmackDown tonight?
I'll save to the women's division. First, I'll talk about that tag team match with Sasha and Tony Storm. Now, I'll say this. It was cool to see Tony and Sasha as a team. It was a cool thing to see. I thought, and it's like finally something that does involve throwing pies in each other's faces, finally. It's still disputed with Tony Storm and Charlotte's been completely terrible compared to Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan. And I don't have a measure here, but it amazes me that you have someone in Liv Morgan who wasn't seen as a top star throughout her time in NXT and was being treated like an afterthought. But then all of a sudden her thing was Becky. She became more interesting. And but yet with Tony Storm, with Charlotte, she was a former NXT Women's Champion, NXT UK Women's Champion, and ever since she had this feud with Charlotte, it's not been all that good. And I think, and I said it before about Charlotte, to me, it's just she's really good in the ring. I think she's, you know, a really good wrestler. She's not my favorite at all, but it feels like to me she's very different from Becky of how she is treating her opponents. If it's not, if it's not Sasha Banks, I feel like it doesn't matter for Charlotte why Charlotte's even still champion at this point because of the fact that she's not really done anything to elevate anyone to be at her level or seem to be a threat to her championship because it's Charlotte, they would protect her. But if you look at Becky or Sasha, how Sasha was champion, she elevated Bianca Belair the best way she could. She elevated even things like Carmella at the time when she faced Carmella. She faced just had good matches and made them interesting. Even though someone like Carmella was going to win the title, but it was something that made Carmella even more a star that she really already is. So with Charlotte, I feel like she doesn't want to put nobody over, and Tony Storm is really good in the arena. Should be treated like how she was treated tonight, and I thought the match was pretty good. And Shotzi came out of nowhere, which was where's Shotzi been? And now all of a sudden she's just in a random tag team match, and her thing with Sasha was just disappeared, and then now they just won, and that's it. So it's like now at this point Shotzi's just been a heel for no reason at this point because she's done nothing since she lost to Sasha that was the final match before Survivor Series. So what do you think about all that situation? That was my thought about that. So
yeah, thanks, Phil. Well, I guess my first question to Jake, and you can pluck anything else you want out of what Kyle had to say there, is Charlotte doing a good faith job, an effective job, both in how she's executing it and what she's asked to do to help elevate wrestlers in general and Tony in particular?
I think it's been one of my longstanding complaints with the way that Charlotte Flair is presented, that she rarely shows that she's been gotten to in any significant way. Like, I guess, you know, she took a pie to the face and expressed a great deal of embarrassment, which, I mean, it was what it was, but that was a silly moment. But rarely does anybody say or do anything to Charlotte where she looks rattled. And I think that's a weakness of this kind of queen persona that she has. It seems like if, you know, the moment that she actually cracks, she's just going to shatter into a bajillion pieces and go insane or something. Because I think it's a detriment to the rest of the characters on the show, because when she's champion and she's the measuring stick of a brand, and you have struggling baby faces who lack confidence in the face of this, this very, somewhat overly confident heel character who never shows that she's ever has, you know, that she's ever been gotten to, or that she ever has a moment of doubt or any of those things. I think it's really difficult to get over as a babyface in that scenario. So I think she does, maybe not intentionally, and maybe, you know, that's just the way that she's told, to act and present herself. But it certainly does create an uphill battle for babyfaces to get over when she's presented this way. And Becky has been almost the exact opposite. You know, she goes way out of her way, even verbally, to sneak in ways to put over her opponents, even while she's kind of half tearing them down as well.
Yes. Anything else that Kyle brought up that you want to respond to?
Well, I think he's right in respect to Shotzi and Sasha. Sasha, their feud has been, I guess, ongoing, but it's been so one-sided that you almost forgot about it. It's like, yeah, Shotzi poses no serious threat to Sasha. And so, and she doesn't even appear on TV even biweekly. It seems like she disappears for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. I actually liked her initial heel turn, and I thought they may have had something there if they would have stuck with it and shown some discipline in how she was presented. But she started losing almost immediately after turning heel, and thus it became kind of pointless.
Kyle, is there anything else you brought up that you'd like either of us to respond to that we didn't?
It's for Sasha or stuff within her character. I know that a lot of people don't potentially like her as a baby face because it seems to she's like a natural heel and feels like they were, you would think Sasha would be the heel, Becky would be the baby face because of the way they were booked throughout their entire time in WWE, but as for when it comes to me, I think what makes it kind of funny is that when on Raw you had when Liv was cutting her promo and that Becky fan was booing the crap out of her, that was too comical. I couldn't even pay attention to what Liv was saying because that fan was like completely distracting. So and then you look at how Sasha is being reaction with the crowd, so like that people don't want to boo her neither. So it's like it seems. And it feels like to me when it comes to Sasha, I know that people don't want she's a better heel than a face because of the way she's presented on her TV and within her promos and stuff like that. But it's especially now with this roster, with them only having, I feel like to me are a really huge heel in Charlotte right now in the women's division. And I guess Sonya and what's her name? I forget her name. Shayna, who's not really done anything credible. She's been being the her thing with Sonya and stuff like that, and they had a thing last week with Xia Li. Kind of the glad I didn't want Xia Li a part of the storyline at all. So if her not being on TV for 1 week for this, it'll be good enough for me because I know her thing was called being the protector and she's the vulture. Yeah. But I get that part, but I don't like it though. That's the thing. I know it'll be a little too early for it, like a Sasha Zaya senior, but it would be something different for Zaya to do. But if they have to do it like this, I don't agree with this. This whole, I'll say with the Sonya Naomi stuff. This whole storyline's been about racism. Tony doesn't like Naomi because she's black. That's the only explanation that fans would think in their head, because WWE's not giving a storyline, a fantasy storyline of why Naomi hates Sonya all of a sudden.
All right.
And why Shane is involved with it, I don't know. But okay, yeah, we're rambling on. But yeah, that's
cool.
It.
So thanks, Kyle. Good to hear from you. I'm going to throw it to Jake on something you brought up there. Have a good weekend, though.
Yeah, you're the same. Thanks.
Yep, you bet. Zai Lee, Jake, what do you think of what they've been doing with her with the vignettes and being the protector and just the story they've told with her so far?
I really like the visual storytelling, you know, with the vignettes, and I thought the lightning effect for her ring entrance was one of the better CG implementations that WWE has managed to pull off. I still don't really understand what they mean by protector and how that really applies to what she's going to be doing on screen, because I you know, she's a babyface clearly, and you know, they told an interesting visual story about how she identifies as this protector, but what does it mean to be a protector while you're on screen having a feud with a heel in WWE? And so I feel like they have to flesh that out, and of course you know, how Zai is able to, you know, deliver that message on the microphone is going to be an important part of that. But I really don't know where she lands from a feud perspective. If Toni Storm doesn't end up capturing the women's championship, I guess maybe she could find her way into a title match immediately, but it would almost feel like it was too soon.
All right, we've got Javier waiting for us coming up soon, but first we'll go to Greg in Kansas City next, you or up next on the switchboard. Greg, thanks for calling. What stood out on SmackDown tonight for you?
Man, I got a lot of thoughts. I will try to condense them into just a few right now with some follow-ups. Overall, the show is the beginning and end segments are really the only thing.
Hey, Greg, you actually sound like you're in an echo chamber on Bluetooth. Is there a way to get
okay.
a better sound?
Sorry about that. Is this better?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, great. It was the beginning and end. The show was built around those. Those are really the only things worth watching. Everything else was just there with a terrible segment that got where the crowd turned on. And I was actually initially very surprised that the Chicago crowd, after all these crowds that haven't been very reacting to a lot of things, were so into the show. I mean, the tag match and then even the Viking Raiders tag team match, which I was surprised the crowd was really into. And then I thought the show was just going to fall off a cliff after that Corbin segment the crowd turned on. But it didn't. Instead, it was just a show. So it didn't fall off a cliff. So that's a good thing. And one good thing about the women's division is that it's very clear a clash between Charlotte and Sasha is coming, probably at WrestleMania. And they're doing a good job of giving you enough of them to keep you excited, but also not giving it away. So I think that's something that, one thing that they should be given credit for in terms of that type of booking. Long term, you know, Charlotte and Sasha is clearly the destination, and they're keeping it going. And then on Toni Storm, this is what they should have done 5 weeks ago. You know, had her win a tag match or something. But I mean, it's just you know, that should have happened 5 weeks ago, maybe. So that's my thought. And then going back to a couple other things that were discussed, I think with
Greg, you're getting a little muffled. Sorry, Greg, you're getting a little muffled again. I'm not sure what you can do to be consistent.
Okay, sorry about that. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know, I imagine there may be a contrived explanation for why Naomi and Sonya are feuding eventually, because a few years ago when it was Naomi and Mandy Rose, like, they just randomly did these segments where she's, like, trying to mess with Naomi by messing around with Jimmy Uso. And then there's a random explanation that 3 years before on an episode of Tough Enough, Naomi had, quote, disparaged Mandy Rose. So that was, like, a random explanation for why they were feuding. So I don't know if they'll come up with something for that now. That just seems like authority bad and all this. An earlier caller basically mentioned that, like, it's just the same thing every week. And I was worried about Zia Lee being thrown into this, because what that tells me is that she's, with the track record, she'll probably be going back and forth with people within a month from now. And that's not what you want to see building talent. So I, you know, those are my thoughts that were regarding the show. And I think that it's very formulaic, but it was basically a show that was beginning, the end, you could pretty much skip everything else, but it was, wasn't good, wasn't bad, it was just there, but the opening and closing segments were good enough that the show could be okay, I think. And the Tony Storm thing should have been done 5 weeks ago instead of wasting time with all the dumb stuff with the pies and everything.
Jake, do you want to latch on anything he said there in reply?
Well, I think I'm mostly in agreement. You know, there wasn't a lot of substance in between the opening segment and the main event, and I think that speaks to sort of the how weak the SmackDown roster has been made after the draft. I think a lot of the star power that had been successful on SmackDown had been moved to Raw to try to boost that show, which was really, really struggling. And unfortunately, it's left SmackDown in a position where, you know, they kind of load up segments with star power, and then, you know, they fill the middle portions of the show with essentially filler, unfortunately. That not a lot of people have strong programs. There's not a lot of star power, and you're just kind of left holding on for dear life, you know, waiting for the rest of the stars to show up at the end of the show. And so, yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment, and it's something that they really need to focus on, because it's a bit of a mess at this point. I think SmackDown could be a much better show even if they had one or two more stars.
Yeah, it is. They're not that far away from having depth where you're not watching the latest attempt to push the Viking Raiders and ask us to take them seriously when, you know, if they just aren't protected and treated seriously. And this idea that, well, when we need to fill a segment, we'll just pull them off the sidelines from doing comedy or doing jobs for any of these wrestlers and get people to care about them again. It just seems really inefficient. You know, they invest a lot of time in Mansoor. Now he's off TV. Like, what? They're going to make us, they're going to tell us to care about him again soon. Same with Shotzi. Where has she been? Oh, don't worry about it. Just watch the show. You know, we have anchor segments at the top, middle, and bottom, and everything else. It, you know, it's just there. You're familiar with them. Watch them do their thing and be happy. And yeah, I mean, it's just the booking could be so much better. And you're right, Jake. It's just, they're just, you know, a handful of acts away that they are consistently pushing to give this show the depth it needs, and then make other things that they're doing on the undercard feel like they're building towards something that'll pay off later, as opposed to, again, like Mansoor is going to be in a IC title match, a gauntlet match during an IC title shot next week. But you can tell, I mean, nobody looks at that and goes, oh, he's got momentum, you know, to use their word, or I think he might win. It's just, he's just a body that they had access to when they put him in there, so they could have 12 people in the gauntlet because it's the 12 days of Christmas. They could easily do a lot better. And then you're watching, you know, Jinder and Shanky, and you're just like, what? You don't watch that going, this is important. It feels like they're on the roster and we're asking you to watch them until we get to a segment that we know you'll care about more. And there's just too much of that going on. And I think Greg is right in that respect. Greg, do you have any closing words for us?
Yeah, a couple more things. First of all, Shotzi, I'm not positive of this, but I'd heard there may have been some quarantine-related issues in terms of her being around big crowds. And I'm not sure about that, but I heard that was a reason for her being off TV. So there might be a reason for that. And then I guess I will finish up.
Well, Greg, I'll pause you for a sec. I'll pause you for a sec. Anytime somebody's gone for a couple weeks, I like assume that's a possibility. But unless they – oh, you know, say it themselves. I mean, I like to not speculate, because eventually we're going to be wrong, even if it seems logical, you know, and we might be right 8 out of 10 times. I don't want to just, and that's not saying that the report you heard or whatever is reliable, but I just don't go there. But I assume everybody just knows if someone's gone for 2 or 3 weeks, it very well could be COVID protocol. Either they tested positive or they're around someone who did. Number two, as far as that goes, if she's gone for a while, give us a story. You know, and it can be as simple as, you know, Shotzi took a couple weeks off the train, just a passing comment, you know, like, as opposed to she's back. And if you were wondering where she was, we're not even going to acknowledge that you've been wondering where she was.
Yeah.
You know, it's that density of booking and the courtesy to the audience to reward that attention to detail, or, you know, it's hardly attention to detail to just go, she hasn't been around and now she is. Tell us why, you know, what's the story? Where's she been? Anyway, go ahead.
That's a good point. I think AEW would probably film a vignette or something at the very least. That's something I think would be done that WWE does not do in the event. Like, and then my last thoughts are, first, I've been critical, and I will continue to be critical of the way Adam Cole is being portrayed in AEW, but that comedy quote unquote segment with Corbin and Moss was way worse than anything Adam Cole has done from a material perspective. So I will say that. And my final point is going back to the women's discussion, like I had this fear or this kind of this feeling, uncertainty regarding when, you know, you start seeing Liv Morgan, you start seeing Piper Niven slash Doudrop, you start seeing Shotzi and Toni Storm get pushed, that this was just going to be filler and something to do for the people who the company actually cares about to do before WrestleMania season kicks in. And I feel a little better about Liv Morgan, but overall, like with all four of these, it was a good night for Toni Storm, but it's like her first good night, I think, since she basically debuted in July and then took 3 months off for an unexplained reasons. But now I don't feel too much to give me the idea that this is going to change, and that this is basically filler until WWE shows me otherwise, that this is something more than just something to fill inside. And one last quick point is that following up on the Viking Raiders thing, and I didn't call in last week, but one thing that happened last week was Angel and Humberto. Like Michael Cole says they're undefeated, and then they lose in less than 2 minutes. It's like this, just following up on that idea that you're expected to invest in these people that they clearly don't care enough about to give you a reason to, and they will be that careless to have Michael Cole top their unbeaten streak and then have them lose in 2 minutes. And eventually you're going to be expected to care about these guys again too. And I don't want to be too negative, but like, sometimes it's hard to imagine some of these people on the lower end of the deal who aren't protected being overly happy about their status at all times. So I'll finish with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Yeah, lots of good points there. Jake, you want to follow up on any of that?
Well, I think the last bit there is just evidence of the chaos of Vince McMahon's mind. Like he cannot commit to an idea for longer than a couple of weeks, and he loses interest in it, or he changes his mind. It's just the flippancy in which he approaches the product, and how a lot of these wrestlers are just disposable, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, to him and to the organization, you know, just based on the way, you know, they've been handling releases lately. I think, you know, the company's approach, you know, of the brand being bigger than the talent, and that no one, you know, is bigger than the company, is really coming back to bite them, because you have, you know, you have the brand of WWE that people recognize as being a worldwide leader in professional wrestling, but I don't think they have the stars to go along with it, at least not in the numbers that they need. And they continue, you know, to toot their own horn on their ability to create new stars on their investor conference calls. And yet I think it's one of the things that they fail at the most, at least in recent memory, when it comes to, you know, the talent that comes out of the Performance Center. And of course, you know, the slew of independent talent that they brought in over the last couple of years and released somewhat unceremoniously in a lot of cases. It's a real problem that they have to address. And I just don't know, you know, if there's an immediate solution to it. There's just too many people on the roster that have been abused to the degree that fans just have a lot of apathy for them at this point.
All right, very good. I'll read an email from Joe that I think is a good introduction to where to go with Javier when we bring him on in a moment here. Joe from New York says, this whole show was a one-segment show. The final segment was the only interesting thing that happened on SmackDown. If it were not for the final segment, this show was mailed in. As I was watching the show, I said, Vince must have gone Christmas shopping tonight. Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar are together again, at least for now. I was surprised they pulled the trigger now. I thought they would have continued to drag this out. But I would not rule out Heyman double-crossing Lesnar at day one, helping Roman retain because it's a way to have Lesnar lose the match but protect him from the loss. And, boy, wouldn't that be great if we have Maurice doing that to Edge on Raw? Well, you know, Heyman is doing that to Lesnar on SmackDown. Just, you know, and it'd be great if Maurice does it first, double crosses, or, you know, they reveal that was a ruse just to foreshadow it happening over on SmackDown. So, anyway, let's shift now to our segment with Javier, PW Torch VIP podcaster and pwtorch.com contributor, comes in often on our shows for a final kind of roundtable segment. Javier, welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Jake. How's it going?
Good. Better with you on the show. Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so this was a rough show. I mean, somehow it felt like I was watching, it felt as long as a Raw. Outside of the Brock Lesnar Reigns stuff, it was just, it was rough. The let me talk about the good stuff. The performance from Heyman and how he delivered that line of, you know, I'm not protect, you know, and how he milked the moment and, you know, it's coming. And then he just nails it like perfect timing. And like, he prays to God because he knows that his time on earth is over. and the whole, you know, the kiss on the cheek, the kiss of death that Reigns gives him. I mean, you know, I don't know if this has any Succession because I don't watch that way. So you're going to have to, you know, say what, you know, I'll leave that to you. But definitely like Godfather kind of feel to it.
Yeah. I think more Godfather. I won't do Succession spoilers, but I think a little more Godfather than Succession in this instance. Yeah. And the question is, does Javier, if the performance is that good and it's a ruse, you know, I don't like doing that too often. You know, like even Maryse and Miz, it's like, if it's going to be a ruse, now you can't, and I mean the whole swerve culture of WWE booking, you know, haha, gotcha, you know, I cried, I pretended, but that's not true. It just, at some point, it just gets to be like where you just stop investing in anything that's happening because you think it's, I should say in anything, but you're on guard that so much of your emotional investment in something is you're being tricked into believing a ruse. And so I just think you got to do that carefully, and I almost think you don't want the best acting when it is a ruse. Like, you almost want people to kind of see it coming a little bit, at least in retrospect, that there was a little tell. Otherwise, again, it's I think being too effective in Heyman's case can actually work against believing him in the future when it's not a swerve, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, listening to the fix, it pretty much sounds like this whole Roman Reigns Heyman, Lesnar thing kind of jumped the shark for Todd with the Saudi show that, you know, he's pretty much, I can't come back to it. So I think that if it is a swerve, I think that would be the point where the story jumps the shark for me for the very point that you said, where they did way too much with this and it would have been too much stuff to have been plotted out for it to make any sense. And that would be like a point where it's like, okay, this is scripted and this is not something that, you know, it's one of those like how there was too many things that he would need to have planned for things to have worked out for this to have actually been, you know, that kind of a sort of group for like that to really work. Which, you know, I'll hand it to them because I'm actually interested because I don't have a feel for where they're going one way or the other. So I don't know if this means that, you know, Heyman's going to be off TV for a bit. Or, you know, what they're going to do. I mean, I'm really hoping it's not a swerve situation because and then that's just going to be like a cop-out because you're not moving the story forward. You're still treading water, putting all the pieces back into play. This feels like a big moment where you're, you know, entering a new chapter in the story, which, you know, by resetting it, it's just going to be very disappointing because it's going to be treading water, you know, and that's like the death knell for pretty much all the angles that they're running. So,
Jake, anything you want to say to that?
Well, I think you should prepare for disappointment, but other than that, I think you're on point. You know, WWE has a track record of doing storylines that just get them through a particular moment, and in this case, it's day one because once they get past day one, they can start setting up the Royal Rumble, and then you can shift this story aside for a hot minute so that you can set up maybe Lesnar enters the Rumble if Reigns denies him another title shot, you know, things like that. So I think there's little evidence just based on how well Reigns is doing from a ratings perspective and a live event tickets perspective and a merch perspective that they would consider completely pulling the plug on him, as a heel, as successful as he is right now. And so I mean, could they be going with Lesnar as a babyface? Maybe. But I think that's a risk because him and Heyman together as a babyface duo for long term, it sets up the crowd starting to reject Reigns again. And I don't think that's a road that they want to go down. So I would rather have them, you know, pull the swerve and right the ship until they can get to the Rumble, then have them spend, you know, 3 or 4 months between between day one and WrestleMania trying to sort out Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman as a babyface duo, particularly with Lesnar probably making sporadic appearances during that time period.
I do worry, Jake and Javier, that they're so honed in on like this one key storyline, and they just figure we'll just figure it out, you know, as we go. There's, you know, little markers here and there that they're looking ahead to that they'll do, and they're satisfied that it's good enough, but the pace of it is actually going to work against people caring by the time they get to what they, you know, perceive as the climax.
Yeah, I think that's a real risk. Oh, go ahead, Javier. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think it's a real risk. I kind of question pulling the trigger on this type of angle here so far ahead of not only the Rumble but WrestleMania. I mean, I guess I'm presuming, and my assumption, you know, or my presumption could be incorrect, that we're probably going to see this feud continue all the way to WrestleMania. But I think it's, you know, unless they have a lot more twists and the writing is going to be a lot better than I suspect heading into WrestleMania, it's a real risk of peaking way too early and then having to have months of mediocre television heading into your biggest show of the year.
Go ahead, Javier.
Well, I think depending on what they have planned coming up, I think there's ways you can salvage this. Like, you know, you don't need to pair Heyman off and Lesnar together, because, you know, considering Heyman took a hit, you just write him off TV. Because, I mean, if you write him off TV, Lesnar's on his own against Lesnar's on his own against Reigns, and then, you know, Heyman comes in with like The Rock. He finds The Rock because he's, you know, he's part of the family, he has connections with the family, and, you know, something like that. So I think there are things that they can do. It really feels like this, it's a moment, and I think resetting it would just, you know, at least me personally, would be it'd be like taking a step back when you took a step forward today. But, you know, yeah, and you're right, Jake. I mean, you know, I'm braced for disappointment. on the Naomi thing, I mentioned this a bit ago. The only thing I was able to find that was kind of like a launching off point, and this was like, I mean, this was like before the draft, when, you know, Naomi started coming about, and DeVille started giving her the cold shoulder. Eventually DeVille cut a promo on her. Naomi was in the ring, and she said that, you know, I've been a champion. And Naomi then DeVille cut a promo, said, yeah, and you were a disappointment. And, you know, you're nothing more than a flashy entrance. And once you get in the ring, you become a disappointment, and you don't deserve the time you're getting. And then, you know, she sent her to the back to catering. And since then, the entire story has been treading water, which has all been about her trying to get, you know, in the ring, or getting Sonya in the ring, and, you know, and then, and that's been going on for like 2 months now, so.
Yeah, it feels like treading water. Oh, I have my suit on, you can't touch me. And now, you know, yeah. Shayna Baszler is going to, you know, be my enforcer or whatever, and take you out from behind. And I mean, it just doesn't feel like anything's being thwarted. It doesn't feel like you're being rewarded. And I mean, frankly, the pace of I'm not an advocate for like rushing through things, but the pace of getting through some of this stuff can be I think speeding it up considerably would be an improvement on the show. I mean, it just so much feels either, oh yeah, we've decided to push the Viking Raiders as the next tag team contenders, and we're showing that and telling it to you with a win over, you know, Jinder and Shanky, who have no momentum and the win means nothing. And, I mean, it's like just too much stuff just gets dropped in out of nowhere, surrounded by storylines that are treading water, with the belief that anchor segments like, you know, Sasha and Charlotte and Reigns and Heyman and Lesnar is enough. And for some people it will be, but for some it won't. And I think, you know, Reigns was wearing the Needle Mover t-shirt, and Needle Mover doesn't have to do with your push. You know, he's got, you know, prelim, you know, mid-card, main event, or whatever the shirt says. It's like, moving the needle isn't where you are in the card. Moving a needle, and I don't want to make too much of a T-shirt. He's trying to make merch money. But if we are to look at it, needle mover means you're increasing viewership, that more people are watching. And that's just not the case. You know, numbers aren't impressive for SmackDown. They're not, you know, in a free fall. But, you know, it, for being such a highly praised storyline with Heyman and Reigns and this character, be nice if they weren't just bouncing either above or below 2.1 million. And that's what they've been doing week after week after week after week. The last time they were above 2.2 million was back on October 1st. So, and you know, the average in September was higher than it was in October and November and so far in December. So I don't know if this was a week to bring out the needle mover T-shirt. Jake, any thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're, the needle mover T-shirt, I don't know if that's like a, it's supposed to be like an inside joke or something, or if that's like a genuine, because, you know, that term has been thrown around, you know, in wrestling circles for a while. So whether they're self-aware enough to make that T-shirt as like a tongue-in-cheek thing or not, I don't know. But
did someone say Roman hasn't been moving the needle? Like, and this is like, we'll just, you know, we'll just throw that back in their face and I'll make money off of someone saying that about me.
I can't recall if it was, if who it was in AEW, whether it was Punk or maybe it was Omega, but somebody mentioned that term at one point or another in reference to Reigns. And that's why I thought it may have been, you know, something of an inside joke, but I honestly think it's, all of wrestling is sort of stagnant at this point, and it's not just SmackDown. You know, they've been stagnant or decreasing in viewership for months. And I don't know what the answer to that is. You know, it's become a niche program, and it does fairly well in a demographic that really matters to advertising. And so, you know, it's not out of the ordinary for wrestling on any night of the week to have a low viewership number, but do well enough in the demos to be in the top one or two slots on a Nielsen chart. And so is that a problem? I don't know. But if anybody is going to start throwing around the term needle mover, I don't think anybody can really make that claim at this point.
And the frustration is, I'd like to watch a show that I can just, like, list one reason after another that I'm really impressed with the booking and the payoffs and the pacing and how they develop new stars and how they're featuring the current stars. I want to do a show like that. And I don't think it's like out of reach to be, I don't think it would take a lot for significant strides to be made in that way. But like I said earlier, I just think they're just content. And I think they look at what you just said, Jake, the demo numbers, and they're, you know, good enough. They're doing over 2 million and there's excuse after excuse after excuse for why they're not doing 2.5 or 2.8 or 3. I talk about AEW getting that second million. I think SmackDown should strive for that third million, you know, and be hungry. And I just do not sense they're hungry at all. I think they're content to just coast their way through their formula, collecting their guaranteed money and making excuses for why it's not doing better. And I think it could. I think making the show more enjoyable by making sure that the filler doesn't feel so blatantly like filler, and that some of the top storylines move at a brisker pace, and they're doing a better job having an undercurrent of rising stars that people are excited to get featured more. And they're just not checking those boxes. Javier, back to you.
Do you think they're just basically punting in this, you know, current generation, waiting for the people in NXT 2.0 to be ready to come in? You know, would explain why they're stretching some of these storylines until infinity.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I really just think they figured out a sports entertainment WWE formula, and they've got their format sheet, and they've got the way they do things, and they're just going to do them that way. I don't think in their mind they think they're punting or phoning it in or mailing it in or stretching it out or holding course. I think they just think they're doing what they do well enough. And there's no sense of urgency the way they're set up with all this guaranteed money. You know, it's across the board now. I mean, the only thing we got to worry about is selling tickets to events, you know, and these, you know, 2-for-1 ticket sales late to try to get enough people in some of these buildings, you know, but then they'll get a show like tonight where they feel good about the crowd and they tout it, or LA, and it just sort of get, you know, then they can just blame the cities or a fluke or something else. Because if they're doing this well in some major markets, then when they don't do well in other markets, they can blame it on, oh, the local economy or something. And I just don't think there's a lot of introspection and self-reflection on how they could be doing better. You know, it's just, I think they're selling themselves short, and it's a lack of diligence and inspiration and willingness to add to what they're doing, not overhaul it necessarily. Some would advocate for that, but I think you can stop short of overhauling it, but just make a lot of other things that you're doing in the filler better and preparing yourself better for the next big thing instead of stretching everything out. Jake, any thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I don't know where that malaise comes from. If it's just the fact that they have so much television revenue that the economic incentive to improve creatively isn't there. I mean, you can look back, you know, over the years and see that Vince McMahon has been at his best personally when his back has been against the wall and he's had a lot of financial risk at stake, and he's had incentive to improve and try to drive his product forward and you know, pay close attention to what his fans are responding to. And then there's, you know, since the company has went public and his financial risk and you know, stake has steadily decreased over the years, he has fallen into some very predictable patterns. And, you know, the last minute changes to the shows and throwing everything out, you know, an hour before they go on the air. And, you know, there is a certain sort of, you know, malaise creatively that has kind of flowed over the entire product. And I think it's reflected in how things are presented. You know, what he's interested in personally obviously gets a lot of attention, and typically it's pretty good, but things he's not personally invested in are just kind of left to rot. And you see that, you know, for most of the middle of the show, it's difficult to get excited about watching anything in WWE that's not in the main event where there's a lot of creative attention and detail paid to it.
Javier, anything else for us?
Yeah. Last week, when I called in, Zach and Brandon were pretty high on the Sasha Banks promo with Toni Storm, and because they were giving Toni Storm the rub from Banks, and that this was a good thing, I took a different view of that, where because Toni Storm was not allowed to speak at all outside of that one horrible line, I thought it was more like they brought in Sasha Banks to pretty much help salvage the situation, you know, salvage something that they didn't, you know, like the direction it was going. And I was, you know, waiting to see if they would give Tony more mic time. Obviously, that didn't happen today. And to see, you know, to get a better feel. I don't have any better feel from it. Do you see, you know, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Jake.
Yeah, my issue with Sasha Banks' promos when she's a babyface is that the only thing that really changes between her heel work and her babyface work is like some minor inflection changes in her voice. Like, there's nothing about her presentation that changes when she's a babyface, and there's very little about her personality that changes when she's a babyface. And when you have her back there with an inexperienced star in Toni Storm, and the way that she comes across as a babyface is still kind of smarmy and condescending at times, I think it does make for awkward conversations. And that one was no different to me. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it. I think it was okay for what it was, but I have a very hard time getting into Sasha as a babyface, particularly as a promo.
You know, you want there to be a reason that we're cheering her now when we weren't expected to a little while ago, but we were before that. And you know, it's another issue, and she's a major player, and you should every time that she's put on television, there should be a core emotion fans are supposed to feel. And I get the sense that she's being used in sort of a utility circumstantial way, you know, whatever the situation calls for, that's the role that she plays. And again, I think it is a problem with Vince McMahon. You know, there's not this, you know, commitment to character consistency that where, you know, you look at her progress over 3-4 weeks and there's a good explanation for why we're supposed to feel different about her. I just don't think that has been there, and it's frustrating. And I think people disengage. I think that, you know, you can kind of have your favorite, but when you have a favorite, and a lot of people, Sasha's their favorite or somebody, you know, someone they really like, and that's great. But I don't think the emotional investment is as great when they're constantly either going with or against storyline, and it doesn't matter. They just sort of blindly are supportive of her regardless of the storyline. Like, you want control of the fans' emotions. You want them to believe in and pay attention to and react to how the characters they like are portrayed on television, not just disregard the story you're telling and like a wrestler either way. That is a distant second place consolation prize over the booker having people kind of in the palms of their hand and getting them to turn against somebody who they liked prior because they buy into an actual turn. And in this case, Sasha should have momentum. And I just don't sense that she does. I think whatever good is happening with Sasha is because of who she is and the equity she built up, not the storyline. And her being nice to Toni Storm is fine, but I don't think people, given the landscape of WWE booking, are sitting here going, you know, are thinking differently about her because of it, in part because they're probably waiting for the rug to be pulled out from under them for her to go heel for 6 weeks before she gets dropped into a tag team with a baby face without explanation. Javier.
Yeah, so do you think that pairing Toni and Banks together is more to, you know, let's just give Toni the rub, and, you know, or is it more like, you know, cause my concern is like, we don't like what we're seeing here, and we need to, and we're 2 weeks away, and we only have like 2 more weeks, well, technically 1 week of build towards the day one pay-per-view, and we need to, you know, try to make Toni Storm look important considering how badly they handled her like the first couple weeks of this feud.
Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you have to do some emergency repairs here to Toni Storm. You know, she really was, you know, presented in a way that, you know, she was embarrassed by Charlotte Flair for a couple of weeks in a row, and then she got to pie face her, and then, you know, they do that promo with Sasha Banks where I don't even know how much a Sasha Banks endorsement really means. I mean, as Wade was saying, you know, Sasha is really over because she's Sasha, not necessarily because she's this big baby face that can transfer any of that fan base over to Toni Storm. And so it's a difficult position they put Toni in. You know, they've kind of presented her as a very, timid and meek person who lacks confidence and has been, you know, had enough of ambition to challenge Charlotte Flair, but thus far, you know, just finally, you know, picked up a win that sort of puts her in position for a title shot. I guess that's what they do now. You know, you don't get a title shot unless you beat the champion in a non-title situation, which is very bizarre booking as it is. But I think they do have
more. Not only because it's ineffective, Jake, at getting challenges over, but your champions are losing left and right.
Yeah, I mean, they've been a little bit more disciplined about it with Charlotte because she just doesn't lose very often regardless. But other champions, yeah, they're losing all the time. And so, yeah, I think Toni is in a tough spot. They have to find a way for her to display some fire, some resilience, so something for fans to grab a hold of. Because I don't think pie puns and acting surprised that she got a win is going to win a whole lot of people over, honestly.
Yeah.
All right, Javier, anything else for us?
Well, on the Drew McIntyre, I'm marveled at the charisma that the man has, that I don't absolutely want to just turn off the channel when the stuff he's involved in lately have been on.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that the happy hour or whatever the hell they call it, that was just horrible. I got angry because they insulted physics with the two of them trying to pull up the sword yet not like holding the desk down, and those are two strong men. You'd think that the sword were that embedded in, they'd lift the desk if they were actually pulling on it. So It was just, I hated that. At least Drew McIntyre's entertaining enough. And my concern is, like, you know, because we were talking about how they tread water and have things go on forever. Do you think it's going to go on forever, or is there hope that this, by at least Royal Rumble, it's going to be done?
I think it's going to be done by then. I think something better will be waiting. I mean, Drew just, he comes across as having enough innate positive traits of the lead babyface, where if you just had a good heel manager and you just had the heel of the month or the quarter get built up on TV with squashes, you know, I mean, Mr. Fuji had those wrestlers for Hogan. Obviously Heenan did, Freddie Blassie did. I'm for going back to a formula like that for a lead babyface like Drew McIntyre. Just have him cut promos that kids are watching and going, you know, I like this guy, I like his message, I'm rooting for him, he stands for something. Adults like him too, and yes, Pat McAfee, everybody's mothers like him too. And just go out there and slay one dragon after another that come after him by having different obnoxious managers develop, you know, bring in these wrestlers and get them over. And instead, wrestlers are getting defined down. You know, Hogan, during his run in the late 80s and into the very early 90s, his opponents were not defined down until after he leg dropped them and pinned them. There was this sense of, here's a new threat. And even if you didn't buy he was going to lose, you were intrigued by the chemistry of how he'd react to the threat on the microphone and how he'd overcome it in the ring, and you would expect a different style match. And I think Drew is kind of tailor-made for that throwback, and I think it would be fresh again, and you could just keep things moving. And then the heels who he slays go on to other programs, you know, and a little bit further down the card, or they eventually get moved to another brand, or they get cut, you know. I mean, there's going to be times where you want to do that. I mean, I don't want to be down, especially with a big angle like we had tonight with Heyman, Lesnar, and Reigns, and Lesnar's a blast to watch, and Reigns and Heyman's performances are great, but I do kind of long for something other than a storyline at the top that is, you know, we'll see, we'll judge it fully as we get a little further along, but it's had some moments where you're just like, this is going on forever and I don't know if I buy it. And it also feels like, is this really what we're going to be watching through March into April before we get something fresh? And then when the leftovers for Drew McIntyre is a sword stuck in a desk with Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin telling bad jokes and the audience chanting CM Punk at him. I mean, give me something better for Drew to do in the meantime. Anyway, Jake, anything you want to say to any of that?
I wish they had something better for Drew. You know, they're really missing that second level heel that they can put in front of him to really challenge him and set
or
him
a manager
up
who's obsessed with taking him down. I know they're kind of anti-manager in the old traditional sense, but there's some good talkers out there who have taken the bumps and paid their dues, who they could be putting on TV and, you know, having an obsession with Drew. That is a card you can play in wrestling that has worked so much over the years, and they really seem resistant to it. And I don't see a positive reason. There's no downside to having that most often, or at least very often, be part of the formula somewhere on both of your shows with a lead babyface, whether he's a champion or just kind of waiting in the wings to become champion again.
Yeah, I don't know if we could expect to see a manager in that context. I guess, you know, that was replaced by authority figures in WWE, and I'm not even advocating that an authority figure be put in that position again. But they do need something, a spark for Drew McIntyre, somebody to put him up against that doesn't appear to be a complete joke or a pushover. And I think he's somebody that I was kind of excited to see move over to SmackDown and eventually challenge Reigns at some point down the road. But they, you know, with the way that this show was gutted in the draft, they just did not give him a lot of dance partners. I mean, I guess you could put him with somebody like Sheamus, but that's been done and done. So I don't know what's out there for him. It feels like they almost need to overcorrected with the draft, and now they may need to move people back over again to fill in the gaps, because, you know, I think Raw ended up, you know, taking so much talent from SmackDown that they're just missing some pieces now.
Javier, anything else for us?
Just the my favorite line, or technically back and forth of the night, was when Pierce asked Zane, neck brace? And Zane replied with, my lawyer said I didn't need it.
Yes.
And he said,
yep,
your lawyer?
One of the highlights.
Doctor. Yeah. That was great. That was great. I'm actually a little bit disappointed that we did not get a quick segment of, like, Brock and Zane crossing paths in the back, you know, a little cameo or something at some point during the show, just to, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, like Sammy's walking down the hall, sees Brock Lesnar coming, and then he turns around and walks away or something like that.
right, yeah.
You know. But, yeah, so, I mean, rough show. At least, you know, the rain stuff was, you know, hopefully moved the story along. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I had.
Javier, thanks. Great to hear from you. Got anything to plug?
Just be on the lookout. I'm going to try to finish watching New Japan. I should have been watching New Japan instead of SmackDown tonight. So probably would have been better for my sanity. I did get tickets for Revolution, so I will be going to that. So.
Oh, cool. Great.
Looking forward to it. In Orlando, so I'll be in touch with you on that. So, all right, guys, have a good night.
All right, sounds good.
And Merry
Christmas. Great to hear from you.
And Merry Christmas. I actually haven't heard that in a while at all so far this month. So Merry Christmas, guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're a week away, so, you know, might as well start.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. You know, have a good one. Take it easy.
Thanks. Yeah. Jake, anything you want to close with? Any spare thoughts we didn't get to?
Man, I think we beat everything to death, so no, not for me.
All right, sounds good. I appreciate it, Jake. How can people follow you on social media?
You can find me on social media at BarnettJake with two T's on Twitter. Otherwise, you can also find me over at ProWrestling.net. I do the weekly AEW Dynamite live reviews for the show on the website, and also I appear with Jason Powell for .net Weekly, which is the flagship audio show for members, and also pay-per-view audio reviews for AEW and WWE. So you can find me at all those places.
Excellent. Thanks, Jake. Always a pleasure talking with you about wrestling. Thanks to our listeners, our emailers, our callers. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you next time.